Yeah.
I'll stop. Make sure it's stuff.
We will have a roll call.
Okay.
Representative Wilson?
Here.
Representative Seaton?
Here.
Representative Feist?
Here.
Representative Pruitt?
Here.
Representative Sisma?
Here.
Representative Kawasaki?
Here.
Chair Bitt?
Here. Okay. We really appreciate you being here. We have more questions than we ever thought we could ever have. We don't have time for that. But if Representative Seaton here, well, there's one question we do need to ask, and then we will come. We'll put together all our questions and get them to you, and I'm sure we can sort that out. But Representative Seaton had one question that we can't leave without.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the question is, did the governor put the money for this funding in the budget? Has he, the administration, come out supporting this change?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, this is Emily Ryan for the record. In the governor's budget, there's a $15,000 increase for CESA, but it's really tied to the funding formula. The child count went up a little bit, and so they'll be getting $15,000 more than last year. Last year, actually, they took a cut because the child count was down from the previous year, kind of a thing. So it's variable, but this year there will be $15,000 more in the budget, again, tied to that last year's average daily membership or the child count. We are actually meeting with the governor's office tomorrow, and that's one of the things that we'll be talking about is the funding formula for CESA to see, what the governor thinks of all of this as well in terms of making that change.
And Mr. Chairman, can follow up? And the committee would appreciate the correspondence from you regarding whether the administration supports that, and whether they're going to put in a bill, if we need a bill to change the funding, or whether that's done through regulation or simply a fiscal matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And we would like to welcome back Representative Sisson, and I thank you for taking part over teleconference. Apologize that I couldn't hear you too clearly, but it's just good to have you back. Yeah. So if we could have the Acting Commissioner Les Morris to come forward, and anybody else you'd like to have join you, and I'd like to encourage thank you both. I really, really appreciate it, and we'll have a whole list of questions here. I would, as Acting Commissioner Morris comes forward, I would like to encourage the members here to any questions during the presentation, feel free to ask, and we have from now until probably 9:50 to for this presentation. And did I say for the record that it was 9:06 when we started? Okay. Thank you.
For the record, Les Morse. I'm the deputy commissioner at the department, acting commissioner until the end of the day, February 2nd. our new commissioner will begin, Commissioner Hanley, on February 3rd. So, Chair Dick, if I can continue my presentation from the other day, we actually ended at a very natural spot. I told you I was going to break the presentation into three components where I'd go over a number of issues, then take questions on those. We did two of those sections, so I really have the last section. I don't have specific handouts to refer to because what I did is just wrote some notes down, but I also, a lot of these are just numbers, but they're numbers that if the committee wants these, I can get them to you after the fact, so you don't have to feel like you're writing all these numbers down. It was really looking at your questions and thinking things through about how to answer them in a way that was helpful, and pulling information mostly from our website to provide to you. So again, if you don't want to be quickly jotting these things down, I can easily provide you the information after the fact of the, because some of this is just statistics and numbers of schools and those kinds of things. So if I can continue, what I'll be doing now is reviewing characteristics of schools in the state. And one of the things, one of the questions was sort of a review of rural schools. I think the question was about bush schools and urban schools, and I'll walk through that. We look at schools in various ways, and so I'll hopefully make that clear through this presentation. There's types of districts, but it's also important to think about where those districts, regardless of type, are located for various reasons. So first off, in the state of Alaska at this moment, we have 508 schools. That'll always be around that number. It changes from year to year based on new schools or schools closing. 27 schools in the state are correspondence schools. Some of those are in-district correspondence. Some of those offer services statewide. 14 of those correspondence schools offer services statewide, meaning they serve students not only in their own district geographic area, but throughout the state, and they have to seek approval to do that from the State Board of Education. 100 schools in the state have 100 or fewer students this year. 53 schools have an enrollment of 10 to 20 students. 47 of the schools have an enrollment actually, I gave you a number wrong. I'm sorry. Let me step back here. So 53, no, I had it right. Apologize again. 53 are 10 to 20, and 47 are 10 to 50. Mm-hmm. So instead of 100 schools with an enrollment of 100 or less, 100 schools have an enrollment of 50 or less. I do have to correct that. There's 53 school districts in the state, and then we also have a state boarding school, Mount Edgecombe High School. So if you did consider that a district, it's one of our divisions, mm-hmm. as I clarified in my presentation earlier this week, that would be the 54th school district in the mm-hmm. state, but it really is a division of our department. I talked about the history of the development of the REAAs in my previous presentation and when they came about. There are currently 19 REAAs, so to remind you what that is the rural education attendance areas that were created in statute in 1975, and then they established over that year's period of time, and that, again, was the year that for 1 year only, we had the unorganized borough school district for that time. Of those REAAs, what I often do when I'm looking at districts, particularly when I'm trying to make sure I get stakeholder feedback, we make sure that we have people from our larger districts, from our rural districts that I would say are on-road rural, and then there's rural off-road rural. And that's how we classify them often when we're doing committees at the department to make sure we get appropriate stakeholder feedback. So when you look at the 19 REAAs, three of them are on the road system, and three of them are on the marine highways, on a marine highway route, and then the remaining of that 19 are rural off-road, sometimes referred to as, you know, bush areas of the state. 16 of the school districts in the state are city school districts, and 18 of the districts in the state are borough districts. Five of those borough districts are rural non-road districts. Example would be the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, or the North Slope is a borough school district. Just as in the schools, the enrollment ranges, the same is true for enrollment ranges within within the districts. There are seven districts that have between 12 and 100 students. There are 25 districts that have between 101 and 500 students. There are six school districts with 501 to 1,000 students. There are 10 districts with 1,001 to 5,000 students. There are five districts with over 5,000, and of course there's one with 49,000, slightly over 49,000 being Anchorage. And that leaves one off if you include Mount Edgecombe, which I told you earlier in the week has approximately 400 students. Yeah, I know I gave you a lot of numbers. I can have these typed up and sent to the committee staff so that you can have them distributed. So if we divide those out in that grouping that I talked about earlier, which we often refer to, there's a big five, which would be Anchorage, Kenai, Matsu, Fairbanks, and then the Juneau School District. Those are often when people talk about the big five, that's the group that they're talking about. Then there's rural districts that are either on road or marine highway, and there are 25 of those districts. And then there are rural remote, which means there isn't a marine highway connection or a road connection, and there'd be 23 of those districts. So the last part of the presentation that I wanted to cover is challenges, opportunities that exist for the department. And I like to think of the challenges as opportunities because in many cases the things that we're working on, we have a pathway to get there, but we need to continuously work. And some of this information, again, is a little bit of a repeat if you're also on our sub-finance committee, because we've laid out these challenges in writing in our budget documents in a broad theme. But what I wanted to do is touch four broad themes and then give you examples of what I'm speaking of when I talk about these broad examples so that you have something a little more concrete rather than a broad statement. So academic growth is something that is always a challenge, but again, I see it as an opportunity as districts continuously work to find new ways to make sure we're serving students. Let me give you specific examples of the types of things that we are doing around academic growth, as well as things that I foresee the department working on in the coming year. And also note that as Commissioner Hanley joins us, we will probably fine-tune our focus and our direction, because that's the role of a commissioner, is to help us bring greater direction and work directly with the governor's office on those things. In terms of academic growth, something that we've been doing to help districts is around curriculum alignment. Our job is to lay out, as a state, is to lay out standards, and then districts adopt curriculums. That's the way the local control is set up, and it's clear in the statute that a local chooses a curriculum that is their instructional program for students. We lay out the standards, then they have to have a matching curriculum for that. But we've been doing a great deal of technical assistance. We hold two workshops each year that we invite any district to attend. We require some districts to attend if they're in a level of corrective action, but all districts are invited, where we help them figure out how do you go about making sure your curriculum is aligned, or before you choose your curriculum, you make sure it's aligned as you're adopting it, so you don't adopt, spend money, then have to figure out if that curriculum's aligned. We've also been working on a topic that I think is really important to this committee in terms of things I heard you say at the last meeting, and that's how do you integrate subjects so that you are providing opportunities for students to understand things, not just in the hard academics that we test in, reading, writing, mathematics, and science. But how do you integrate things from career and technical education to bring meaning to math in different ways? How do you integrate art education? how do you make sure local geography, the local culture is integrated? So we've been doing workshops on how you would lay out and establish that. Educators call that mapping. So you're just mapping your curriculum against different content areas. Actually, something that I personally have a great deal of experience with as a classroom educator before I left the classroom in 97, became an administrator. I worked with a team that did exactly that in a very integrated program. Another focus under academic growth, and I alluded to this, is career and technical education. We have a partnership with the university and with the Department of Labor and have worked together to build a career and technology education plan. Our staffs regularly meet. Frankly, earlier this week, I met with the Department of Labor commissioner. Both of our staffs were together representatives from the university and talking about where are we with the plan that's somewhat broad to creating an implementation plan for the next year. Again, it's what I think is becoming a very strong partnership, and we're continually looking at how do we get at academics but through career and technical education to bring meaning. And to me, all of these pieces strongly support our work around making sure kids have opportunities to leave the K-12 system and go into entrepreneurships, go into the business and career world, go and be successful in credit-bearing courses at the university level. It leads me to the second major area, which is refining our standards and our assessments. And I, again, alluded to that, I think, at the last meeting. Maybe it was at finance. I'm not quite sure, so let me be real clear. We're working on raising our standards, but making sure that our standards actually lead to students being able to go into industry if they meet those standards or be able to go into college credit-bearing courses. So how do you do that? Well, our first meeting involved bringing university people to the table who teach entry-level, and I keep saying credit-bearing courses because one of the criticisms often is too many students go to the university and that first year have to take remedial courses that aren't credit-bearing and don't lead to a degree. So we bring people to the table that do teach those types of courses that are credit-bearing and say, what's going to take? What does our 12th grade standards have to be at so there's a smooth entry into that world? As well as we did the same with industry people. We had them together at that first meeting. And I think that was very powerful, and they'll be involved in the process throughout. But in addition to that, it's trying to find tools we can provide to districts to help students better gauge where are they at relative to those standards. So over the last year, we developed for the first time formative assessment tools that are online and districts can use for free, where they can take their students and do a writing assessment whenever they want, a couple of times a year, to say, where are we at? Let's not just wait for the standards-based assessment at the end of the year. So we already had this in reading and mathematics. We did not have that in writing, and we now do. We also did not have that in science. We test in science, but we didn't have any type of a formative test or an interim test that they could take instead waiting to the end of the year. So we developed, over the last year, science and writing assessments, those types of tools. As we redesign our standards, of course, we'll have to go back and retool these things, but that's something we would work with our contractors on. All of the things I've been speaking about to this point in terms of academic growth and the refinement of our standards and assessment are all key in making sure we are really targeting the needs that we have for our students around preparing them to be successful with the Alaska Performance Scholarship. And we think these are all important factors in that support and are all very necessary. Some other things that's mentioned in our budget document that is real key is effective use of instructional time. And we've approached that in two different ways. First off, our state board, and this is something I mentioned yesterday, our state board is very interested in this, and they asked us to do a thorough review of all of our regulations, looking for regulations that, in fact, are not required, maybe they were once, were not required in statute. And I think when we finish this process, we're taking our recommendations to them in March, what we'll then have is a set of regulations where we collect what statute says we should collect. If we, oftentimes we collect things and they're not used, we will stop that practice. But if it is in statute that we must collect something, we have to keep it in our regulation. But we did a very thorough review. It took a lot longer than what we thought it would, because it scrubbing through every regulation we have was a bit of a challenge. And we will take all of those recommendations to the state board. Actually, we'll bring them regulation packages and have them consider whether they put that out for public comment and move forward on that process.
Excuse me, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, are you at the same time that you're doing that, if you come across something that maybe you used at one time but you're not using anymore that's in statute, that you would bring it to us so that we would be able to change the statute if it's needed?
Through the chair, Representative DeWilson. Absolutely. Actually, I think one of the things that we're learning is as we thin these out, we probably have what makes sense in terms of collection of data and accountability. But I will take that back and look at the work that's been done and make sure that issue is raised with the board. But I don't know what we'll find, but I'll take that under advisement and take it back to the board and the commissioner.
Excuse me, if I could, mm-hmm. just a thought that I had in the meantime. We talked about preparing students for industry or college, mm-hmm. and there's one thing that I'm personally very, very weak in, is the whole concept of entrepreneurship. Many of us who've worked in jobs all our lives tend to forget that, but as we drive down the road, right to the right and left of every road is a lot of small businesses, and I went through 16, 18 years of school and college and never once learned how to start a small business. So I think that's, especially when we're trying to stimulate the Alaskan economy and local economies, I think it'd be really important for us to include in our high school programs as to how to start a small business, or even if you want to get involved in a franchise, you know, how to do that. Personally, I'm 65 years old. I don't have a clue how to get started. So if we could, I think that'd be pretty exciting to include that. Okay.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Chair Dick. Actually, it's a great interest of mine. I mentioned last time that I had this love of history from my history major. My second major, while I was a bit confused as I worked through my bachelor degree and ended up double majoring, my second was in business. So it is, I think, an important area for students to have. And there also is a certain level of just understanding how all those business things operate, even if you're just going to be a consumer. So I think some of the work we're doing around CTE will bring those things to the surface.
Excuse me, Representative Stifner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to double underline what you just said. And yes, this sounds like something that is just something to add to, but one of the things that I think we're not doing in this legislature, which I think is utterly critical, it's absolutely triple critical in this committee, and that's the schools, because we're a state that is a boom and bust state. And we like to think that we're building the future with oil and gas in it, and so we just stay on this high. But that's not actually what's happening in terms of the income and from the one big resource we have. And the other big resource that we have is our population, and the ones in school are the ones that are going to make its survival. It's our survival is absolutely, utterly dependent on learning what's going to make it possible for this state to not bust, but to resume the good, steady, well, it's never been a steady thing. We need to have a good, solid, sustainable economy, and the students will do it. And entrepreneurialism, and I actually thank you, come from a family. It's, I think, five generations of entrepreneurialism, and I come from 27 years in my business. My daughter is highly successful, much more so than I was in mine, and we don't have it in school, and that's the only way we make it. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sisna. Go ahead.
Let me mention a few other areas around effective use of instructional time, because besides the regulatory work, there's work that we do in terms of technical assistance. We have 27 teacher mentors. We have 15 principal coaches. These folks go out and work directly with teachers in their classrooms. They make visits minimally, and this is a challenge given the remote natures of some parts of our districts, but they are with those teachers on a monthly basis. What do they do in the in-between? Let me tell you, these are heavy users of Skype. They are in video contact on a regular basis. The one thing that our principals coaches tell us is our workday really begins about 3, because that's when principals have enough time to start ringing Skype and calling in to talk to their coach. And what I'm told is many of our principal coaches, their busiest time of the day is about 3 o'clock to 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the evening, because that's when principals have time. The same is true for teachers, except what I hear from mentors there is it's early in the morning and then late in the day, and they do get contact. So our mentors, even when they're not directly there, they're answering emails, they're taking them to sources, they're having audio conferences, and they're frequently using the Skype tool as a way to video audio directly at any point in time. So there is a lot of contact there.
Excuse me, if I could comment, I've done a lot of traveling around schools, and I'm always running into those mentors. Mm-hmm. And the feedback I get from the teachers is very, very worthwhile. It's just somebody, seasoned veterans that are coming in and just in real positive coaching way, you know, not monitoring people, but instead just, I get a lot of positive feedback from the teachers. So thank you.
We've also built a state system of support over the last few years where we have several contractors in the field that have expertise in particular content areas. So we have reading experts, math experts, science experts. We actually hired 2 art experts over the last couple of years. They go out, they're primarily working with districts that are students are underperforming, or that next group where we're trying to prevent them from being in a group that's underperforming. And their goal is to work hand-in-hand with the district curriculum director to get a good, let's talk about reading for example, get a good reading program in place, make sure the reading program they have is aligned to the standards, and then teachers are getting professional development so that they can implement that program. And we do that professional development in different ways. We do it live. We do it with webinars. Right now we're doing a series for 4 different districts of webinars where it's a webinar specifically designed for that district. And it is based on that district's chosen reading program that we already made sure was aligned to the state standards. They can talk about that district's data and their student data because they're talking only to the people in that district in this webinar, and it's uniquely designed for them. We're also recording the webinars, so should anyone miss them, they can go back and review them. This is something that we're working on with this small group of districts right now, really trying to learn how effective is that. We're getting positive feedback, but this is our first year of really diving into those webinars at that level. We've used those kinds of tools for professional development for a few years now, working with other agencies, but this is the first time we've engaged in it through our state system of support. And I am pleased with what I'm hearing. I can't wait to get the end of the year results where we have all the evaluations of the participants and such. Those folks are on the ground. They're out in the field. That's our state system of support, content coaches. They're our ears, our eyes. They're the folks out in the field. They're primarily retired educators, except one of the art specialists is not. He's a young artist who actually has done a lot of education work as a contractor with art and literacy and is incredibly talented, and he works side by side with another art person we hired who is a retired educator. Those folks, again, are in the field. We talk to them a lot on the phone. We meet with them a couple times a year, but they are out in the field. They don't spend time in Juneau, in the Gold Belt building, working, their field agents. Mm-hmm. Last year, we received funding for three positions, a specialist, content specialist for science, mathematics, and literacy. And those positions are at the department. They do provide support for those contractors in the field. If those contractors need resources, these folks identify the resources and get them to them. But these folks work on much broader work than that. When our science person started, the first thing I had him do is connect to districts that had science specialists that were dealing with issues around STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Matter of fact, Anchorage hired a coordinator just for that role this last year. The first business card I took our new science person was contact this person so that we can begin looking at broader statewide work, not just working with intervention districts, but working with all of our districts, including our largest five districts, on how can we build partnerships to support this kind of work for everyone. So these content experts at the department are part of our state system of support. We think of our state system of support much more broadly than just districts that have underperformance with student achievement. So their work is that broader work in that capacity. So we're very excited about having those positions in place at this point. All of those things, again, are sort of intertwined with every challenge or opportunity that I mentioned, but I mentioned them under improving instructional time because I think as we refine these skills, we support schools better in making sure there's a focus on instruction. Even the principal coaching program, to me, is in significant part how our role in the coaching program isn't to teach the principals how to manage their schools. We think the best people to do that is the district leadership, because management is done differently in different schools or different districts. Our role is to help them become real effective instructional leaders as principals, and that's where our coaches come into that role. The last and fourth challenge that I'll mention, which I don't know that this would ever go away, but it's implementing our federal laws. I mentioned how many staff work with that. Out of student and school achievement, that one line item has 70 staff, and I mentioned the vast majority, and I would venture a guess that 68 of those 70 are monitoring or putting in place or dealing with a federal program, as well as some of the other line items as well. One of the significant issues to me is it continues to be the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It was amended by No Child Left Behind. It's ready to be amended again or reauthorized. In 2007, that was the year it was up for reauthorization. Usually it takes a few years to get to that. But they'll be working on that. I'd say anywhere in the next year to 3 years, we'll see reauthorization around that. And once that happens, we'll have challenges to make sure we figure out what were the changes and how do we respond to those. One of the things we've dealt with a great deal within that Title I structure, which is the group that's working with Title I schools, which are schools to support students who are economically disadvantaged, is school improvement grants. The way that the U.S. Department of Education has done school improvement grants over the last few years has changed significantly. It's a challenge for us to work with the schools in implementation because rather than giving small grants to lots of school, they've moved it to larger grants to try to get complete school change to occur, what they call a transformation of the school. There are significant challenges behind completely changing everything, including how you evaluate teachers being based on student performance versus traditionally just on observations and delivery of instruction. Some significant and powerful things that are a challenge. And then over the last few years is just support and of the implementation and the issues around the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act dollars that came in. We got funding that the legislature approved in several different categories that have been provided to the school district. The challenge behind it is just the administration of those dollars. But those are ongoing challenges we deal with. That's the core of that teaching and learning support division. and we continue to deploy those things. So that concludes the overview presentation. I know that we'll have many opportunities to have staff who have in-depth knowledge in various areas before you throughout the session, and we will work with you. I mentioned the directors that we have. Also, I think in the room is Marcy Herman, who's our legislative liaison. She'll work closely with your committee to make sure that we are responsive to your needs throughout the session.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And one of my questions is that it's really great hearing about all of the different programs that you're doing and the different ways that you're trying to get it out there to every place, and working on the curricula, working on the mentoring programs that you're doing. All of those things sound really, really wonderful. One of the things I learned several years ago was that the most important criteria, I guess is the term, for student success scholastically is, more than any one other thing, health. And health, apparently, we're the last in the nation in terms of people who have health training. And I think we're talking a degree of some kind, something like that. And we are last in the nation in terms of kind of social and sometimes behavioral health habits, that kind of thing, for our kids. And that's going to make those kids absent from school. It's going to mean that when they're at school, they're not really there, and they're disruptive to the schools. And actually, those are all things that can be taught. Mm-hmm. It's totally preventable. Most of the health things that are behavioral are preventable. So can you tell me what, and that's probably in yours, I know it is, but can you tell me what actually you're doing in that capacity?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, and I apologize. I really should have touched on that area because it is something that we are working on, and in the 7 or 8 weeks I've been acting commissioner, I've actually moved forward some things that I've consulted with the new commissioner on, which one was working with the governor's office. The governor's office, as you know, has an initiative called DVSA, the Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We believe clearly that many things that occur in school are things that lead to that. In some ways, domestic violence and sexual assault is a symptom of things that we could begin working on through health education at much earlier ages. So under that initiative, we were authorized to bring on a position focused on the school components of domestic violence and sexual assault, which means you go back and look at the kinds of things that happen in health education around that and begin providing good tools, curriculums, curriculum suggestions, those kinds of things, as well as training around these issues. Now, we're in the beginning stage because the staff member we hired first day at the department, this person has a lot of experience, by the way, around these issues through another department, but doing work with schools from another angle, which she started on the day that the session began. So she just is getting her feet wet on things, but comes with a great deal of knowledge. And what we're looking at is how can we promote comprehensive health education in our school systems, and trying to also, when I met with all of the candidates for this position, I talked about how do you do that and how do you even make suggestions that are in these schools of such variety that I mentioned earlier in terms of size and locations. And Patty Owen was the successful candidate for this position. One of the things that struck me, actually all the candidates that I talked to were high quality candidates. I wished I could have hired three people. Frankly, it was a real struggle to make the final recommendation. But one thing that I did hear from her is she had really thought those things through in terms of what do I have to do to begin making contact to involve the right stakeholders to think this through. And it wasn't as though she had all the magic answers, but one thing that she did have is here's how you connect to the people that are living that life that I can help with. And then because of some of her work, she had actually interacted with schools of various sizes. So we are working on that. We've also refocused some of our resources to have somebody serving a position around counseling with one of the areas of that is to really look at suicide prevention, which, again, the same thing. It has lots of symptoms that lead to that, so we have to get back at the systematic issues. So we've taken a and brought refocusing one position in terms of their work effort within the department and then bringing on this new position. We have done work in the last 5 months. The refocused position occurred last fall at some point, and it was really looking at how can we get at some of these issues by looking at our own resources differently, and then the position with the Domestic Violence Sexual Assault Initiative. So I don't have the answers, but I have people that are going to get at those issues in the department, and we've just started that work more intensively.
Okay, we have four questions and not a lot of time. So Representative Kawasaki.
Yep, just briefly. Thanks for being here, Les. The President mentioned in the speech to the State of the Union yesterday about Race to the Top funds, and I think that are we still the only state that doesn't accept Race to the Top funds, or are we now accepting them? And has there been a change maybe in the administration to look at those funds in future years?
Through the Chair, Representative Kawasaki, the Race to the Top funds were a competition. We were one of, I believe the last round of that competition, 35 states, or maybe there were two rounds, and a total of 35 states applied. So we are actually in a group of 15 states that did not apply. The second piece of that is only a limited number of states, and I don't know the number exactly. I'm thinking it's around either 18 to 20, maybe 21 states actually received Race to the Top funding. Interestingly enough, they're all on the other side of the Mississippi except for Hawaii. No Western state except for Hawaii was a successful candidate for Race to the Top. There is something else that you may have heard that we are one of two states that didn't do. We didn't help write the Common Core standards, but we've actually went to every meeting about the Common Core standards. And not every state that helped write the Common Core standards adopted the Common Core standards. Actually, I think they're at about 35 to 40 states have adopted the Common Core standards. What we said is we will have Alaska stakeholders look at our standards. We will look at the Common Core when we're evaluating our standards, and we will make sure ours are rigorous as well, but Alaskans will make that decision. So, but we are using the Common Core with our committee so that they look at that. We just don't believe that we should necessarily just jump on a bandwagon and presume that they're good standards, because actually our committee, our folks have found some issues with them. So that hopefully adds clarity around those issues.
Thank you. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Years ago, we used to have a system of regional high schools that basically kids from villages migrated to these individual high schools, and that's how they received their high school education. Because of the Molly Hooch decision, that system went away. Currently, you mentioned we do have Mount Edgecombe. We've retained the Mount Edgecombe School as our one state boarding school. Is there any support out there, and not necessarily in your department, but in the buzz that you hear from administrators and teachers that you deal with, is there any support for reinstituting at least a limited edition of some of those boarding type schools, not necessarily as a mandatory method of education, but something that students could elect to go to, and that would be able to provide, because of their size and economies of scale, provide a perhaps more specialized or in-depth education in many areas.
Through the chair, Representative Feige, there are two other boarding schools in the state besides Mount Edgecombe. They're ran by local school districts. And one is in Galena School District, which I've actually visited. Pretty fascinating program. They do a lot of career technology things. And there's also one in Enana, which I've not visited and I'm less familiar with as a result of that. It would be, I hear the conversations frequently about this, but in terms of a policy direction of the department, I would actually wait till I have time to consult with Commissioner Handley on that issue. But I think the other thing that I would have to look at, and I don't know right off the top of my head, is the capacity at those two current boarding schools in those other communities and whether they're at capacity or not, which might speak to parents' desire to have their children in those environments. But we can get that information and make sure that's before the committee.
A follow-up?
And just one more question. One of the things I brought out of the campaign, I had a long talk with a fellow named Jack Morris from Delta Junction. Jack is very well known in that community for being the head of the basically the high school welding program that over the years basically trained people and got them certified to weld, and that a lot of those students went on to support themselves by welding as they attained the rest of their education. One of the things he pointed out in the sort of drive to make kids more aware of some of the vocational opportunities in education, and also as far as school districts trying to implement vocational training, one of the big problems his point was that one of the major problems with our educational system is that it's run by people who have all gone to college. And in a lot of cases, especially the counselors that deal with the individual students, they really have no clue what goes on in that sort of separate track in life. I mean, they went to college, so they're sort of directing the students and you know, implying to the students that if you want to succeed, you have to go to college. I went to college. I went to graduate school. I, you know, that then actually worked for a living since then. And as I fly around the state, you know, a lot of the jobs that I go to, the most important guy in the job is not the college graduate. It's the guy with a good touch on a loader. It's the guy that can run a grader, or who the mechanic who can fix whatever breaks. Is there an effort on the education departments, much like you're coaching your principals and coaching some of your special needs teachers? Is there an effort there to kind of re-educate some of the counselors and make them more aware of educational opportunities outside the college track that could be made available to students?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, mm-hmm. The career and technical education plan does speak to some of those things, and I think one of the things that is often successful with that, I personally have done some work with when I was a principal, is bringing counselors, teachers of content areas, and having them do some work in industry over summer workshops. And I know that that has been something that our people in our career and technical group have received support for districts to do through grants. But it you raised some interesting questions that'll cause me to go back and talk to the group about how we're doing that in a more systematic way and trying to promote those things, because I think if you take those people and give them somewhat of a lengthy experience in that kind of an area, some different industry areas, it might help them better work with students and think more broadly about not only their content, their teaching, but also counselors, how to prepare students and help them think about those things, as well as educating them on the many opportunities that exist that are two-year types of certificate type of programs and those things, which we can work closely with the Department of Labor on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Graduation isn't the only metric, but it's a very important one. I mean, we're talking about completion. And across the United States and across our state here, the most effective thing that we have seen for increasing graduation rates is advisor advocate programs within the schools, doesn't matter if it's high school or college. But I'm not seeing anything in the department moving forward with trying to promote those programs that have been the most effective in our state, in the schools across the state. Can you address that issue?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton. Cindy Kern will be before you Friday. I'm not just shoveling this one off on her, but I think what I'd like to do is go back and talk to her, because it was my understanding that the graduation working group had talked about some of these ideas, and when they had their last meeting, I don't know where they ended up. They briefed me after it, but what I was really asking them to is, tell me how all these ideas you've talked about we now can begin promoting in some systematic way. And so as we prepare to figure out what the role of that particular group is, as Commissioner Hanley comes on, one of my suggestions to them is, how do you take ideas? Because I know this idea was brought up at that point, partly because I heard them also brief the state board on the idea. How do we promote it systematically? So you raise an important point. When we found out, when we have learned about things that in fact work, we ought to promote it. We ought to lay out, here's how you put it in place in your local district. So I will ask Ms. Curran if there was some work around that, so that she could give you details on Friday. But the other piece is, I'm asking them to work on the next piece of, what do we do to talk about what happened to that committee? It shouldn't be just some work that people sat around a table at the Talking Book Center in Anchorage and spoke of and didn't get it outside those doors. So I think it's an important question, an important challenge for us to work on.
I think we have time for one more question. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Les, you talked about the health education and how you've got a position on staff now. I hope that you're really thinking about doing some teacher education in this area, because I think teachers, some, don't necessarily look at all the kids and see. I mean, sometimes it's the quiet ones or the disruptive ones that are looked at, the disruptive ones especially, looked at as troublemakers, and you don't know how to deal with them always. And I hope that that the teacher education is really in place to see, okay, why is that child acting that way? There's a need, there's a problem somewhere, maybe it's at home, we don't know what the problem is, but there's a reason. And I'm hoping that that we will really start working with teachers. I don't know, it'd be nice if the university would teach those things to teachers, but I think that we are learning a lot more with kids that are been from families where there's domestic violence going on, or sexual abuse, or whatever, or the kid that always falls asleep every day. It's because they're up scared to death every night what's going on at home, you know. So there may be reasons for some of this, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to have teachers that can recognize some of the symptoms and follow through and direct them, because I know there's a lot of schools that don't have counselors, that they only, some schools only have one teacher, you know. And so I think the teachers really need to be helped in these ways so that they can help the kids that they're working with.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, thank you. I actually made notes of what you're saying. I'll take that back and share that with that team, but I am in a complete agreement with you.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. In respect to all of our schedules, I think the next meeting is going to be on Friday, 8 to 10. We'll have an update from the graduation working group. I'm really looking forward to that. I attended a couple of meetings, and they'll give us some ideas about why students are dropping out. Cindy Kern and Eric McCormick will be there, and the meeting's adjourned.